Writing the Unwritten Rules. My culture was all about limits, a recommended image and lifestyle, with modes of speech characterized by highly specialized jargon, bland fashion choices, and muted behavior, that kind of thing. We'd built an entire culture of all that. And no one would admit that any of it existed, really, that it was something we all bore the weight of, that it deformed the shape of our growing lives. Nope, it was just God's will, and certainly nothing we'd made, and it wasn't written down anywhere, because, of course, Christians didn't have to follow rules. So why were there so many, and how did ours have so much power over us? Jake grew up going to much more mainstream churches than I did, but he still says,
"There were a lot of unwritten rules in my home, but not necessarily in my church. They could have been in my church, but I credit my parents with feeding those rules to me primarily. How aware was I of it? Not very much until I was a teenager and started to question things and hear things from other Christians, read things like that. I was made aware of them as I began to question things and grow up to be confident in Jesus for myself, not just being wholly validated by my parents' approval. What strung together all of these unwritten rules was fear."
Same here. Fear of seeming less Christian. Fear of jeering and snideness in church social settings. Fear of shaming the family. I believe many of us were in religion for the being right, and also for the limits and the control. Control was very important. Many of us are just kind of like that. Mary writes,
"The feeling of control is very important to me, though I hate that it is. I'm learning to let it slide in many aspects, and the more I do, the more I enjoy not having it. When the feeling of my car spinning out of control, literally, was inexplicably joyful to me, I knew that the value I placed on control was very misplaced. I view the loss of control as sin if it leads to debauchery, I guess, or violence directed at others, but mostly no. I did feel that way, though, strongly, for years. Control was to be worshipped and put on a pedestal. Virtuous and good and all that."
Laura, from a TW group, says,
"I wasn't allowed earrings as a kid, or makeup, or pants, or cutting my hair, or shaving my legs, or playing volleyball on the high school team, or acting in a play, or joining California Scholarship Federation, or dating boys, or getting scholarships, or watching TV, or listening to anything other than classical or dirge-like Christian music, or reading novels, or going to Awana, or Girl Scouts. Going to the movies was right out. Oh, and no Christmas."
I felt very keenly that my life was in the control of heedless others, a blind system actually, more than specific people. Once we'd had the first division in my 20s and most people were gone, I was very aware that I was still under this bondage. I felt like I really needed to write it all down and see if I could get the men in power to admit that all these rules really were the ones we were expected to follow. Because I was following them, all right. So I wanted someone to admit to them, and that when we didn't follow them fairly closely, we were socially punished, losing any status in the group, shaming our parents, and having gloom and doom predicted as a direct result of our self-indulgent folly. As published in a previous work, here's what I sent to 25 of the contact names in North American TW assemblies in the US and Canada. I got 7 responses.
June 25, 1995. "Dear Brother So-and-so, greetings in our Lord Jesus Christ. Sorry to be sending you a form letter, but I'm sending out more than one of these and have limited time for correspondence. I am currently trying to define the exercises of the older than myself and more prominent brethren amongst us regarding general Christian comportment. I look, of course, to the Lord for my own exercises, but I'm also interested in your personal exercises as to how a godly person might live. I have enclosed an outline which puts into words my understanding of the general exercise of my older brethren, at least as far as I've been able to ascertain from listening to their ministry. I would be simply interested to hear how much in agreement you find yourself with the wording, content, and spirit of the outline itself. The general lack of understanding, harmony, and communion of spirit between the younger generation and the older ones, at least in my area, has prompted me to write this rather odd letter. It could be, perhaps, a step on the road to increased understanding of one another's concerns and exercises. Satan would have us keeping our distances from each other, left staring over our shoulders in distrust and confusion at what each thinks the other is up to. Maybe this kind of thing could help with all that. Feel free to comment as far outside the boundaries of this outline as you wish, What, for example, are your biggest concerns, fears, annoyances, and areas of confusion as to the practical lives of your younger brethren? Being specific and giving examples here would be vital to the discussion. Listing the verses you base your exercise upon is, of course, often a good idea, but your own interpretation, understanding, and specific use of them is what will make this a personal understanding of each other. If you find yourself uncomfortable or unhappy with this whole mode of thought, feel free to send a letter explaining this, or feel free to send nothing at all. I have no desire to change anyone else's exercises because I view them as personal, so I will appreciate any differences in understanding to be handled in a gracious spirit or long-suffering patience rather than anything which could be construed as argumentative. I want to know how you feel so as to understand it firsthand. You are, of course, free before God to feel how you wish. The judge of all the earth knows the rights and wrongs of everything. I wish merely to understand my older brethren. Feel free to pass this on to anyone who might wish to respond to it in any way whatsoever. Yours and him, Mike Moore. General outline of lifestyle guidelines for godly young people. My older brethren's exercises as near as I understand them. A Christian does not indulge the flesh in worldly entertainment. This includes television, movies, music concerts, theatrical productions, recordings of worldly music, or anything else which is merely to entertain and does not edify. Sporting activities and board games are permissible, provided they are engaged in with proper supervision and in the company of fellow believers. A Christian does not indulge in filthy habits such as smoking, nor does he partake of any food or drink which contains or contained alcohol, except, of course, within the context of the breaking of bread on Lord's Day morning. Social events are for Christian fellowship and mutual encouragement of fellow believers. In the case of events for the young people, activities should be supervised by a responsible adult, preferably married, and should include the elements of prayer and Bible reading. All assembly meetings are to be attended except in the case of extreme illness or unbreakable obligations of some nature. This is so that we will be kept and so that our feet will be washed and our doctrine tested. Our attendance will serve to sanctify us while our attention will serve to edify us. Even if one is tired or preoccupied, attending is still a very worthwhile endeavor in itself, as the Lord is there and wants to see us there as well. A Christian's dress and deportment should make him instantly recognizable, standing out as a testimony in this wicked world. One's dress should not be gaudy, flamboyant, immodest, or reflect this world's fashions or rebellious nature. Neither should it serve to draw attention to oneself except as a Christian testimony. A Christian should be neat, tidy, pleasant, friendly, polite, and respectable-looking. A Christian girl obeys the scriptural exhortation given that she not wear jewelry or men's apparel. Her dress is to be plain and modest, and should not be calculated to entice young men physically. Shorts and pants, therefore, should be worn only in situations where her everyday woman's apparel would compromise her modesty even more than the wearing of the men's apparel. Her hair should be worn long, at least to the shoulders, just as the man's should be worn short, off the ears and collar. A woman is to wear a suitable head covering when praying or reading of God's word or singing of hymns is taking place. It shows a proper spirit of submission to her place that she wear her head covering before entering and until leaving the meeting hall. The first day of the week is to be set aside from the rest as the Lord's Day. It is not for our work or entertainment, and therefore no games or sports should be played, nor work done, if at all possible. There are enough meetings on that day to fill the time up adequately, and the time in between them should be spent in quiet meditation and subdued Christian fellowship. The mood of the remembrance of the Lord's death should characterize the entire day, if not the whole week. A Christian's time should be divided between activities which are absolutely necessary for day-to-day living and those which are for spiritual edification, for example, Bible study, prayer, fellowship, and activities related to evangelism. A Christian should go through each day, prepared at each moment, to support the idea that what he is doing is what he feels is the Lord's will for him at that time, and not merely his own idea. He may well be interrupted in it by the Lord's return for us and need to give just such an account. This world, as well as those Christians more infected by its thinking, is sure to criticize us. We should listen only to the Lord and those older Christians who we see going on well for Him and who are more experienced than we are, ignoring the rest, seeing it for the persecution that it is. True exhortation can be recognized by its source. For example, those who take an active role in meeting affairs or are concerned with them, and those who are older and farther down the road than we are. Exhortations from these older brethren should be taken as if the Lord Himself were speaking to us, because no doubt that is exactly what is happening. A wise Christian believes the teachings of these men and understands that though he might not have as deep an understanding of doctrine as they, and may find some of it confusing, he needs only to recognize their faithfulness over the years to know that they are to be trusted to be right. When it comes down to a question of whether they or I am right, I should certainly be put in the place of death where I belong. I should always esteem all my brethren gathered with me to be greater than myself, and remember to take that lowly place always. A good rule of thumb concerning doctrine is, if it's new, it isn't true, and if it's true, then it isn't new. If I remember this little phrase, I will not lay hold on doctrines that are new to me and which I haven't heard before. There are many new things coming in amongst us, and we have to fight them. We need to hold fast the old landmarks, and we have no need of going into books which are not part of the collected ministry of reputable, departed writers which have been handed down to us. Gospel work is a sadly ignored part of Christian living today. It is mostly being left up to a faithful few who distribute silent messengers to the neighborhood, or in some cases, many of the third world nations, when we should all be an active part of it. Satan would have much less success leading the young after worldly enticements if more of their time was filled up with gospel work. Self is our biggest enemy and needs to be mortified daily. We either please ourselves in this world, or we please God at meetings. One can't do both. Jesus first, others next, and yourself last makes J-O-Y a formula which always works. If we live any other way, we will find ourselves not interested in the meeting and soon will be out in this world, which is no place for a Christian to find himself. I never lose the old nature, and my battles with it will only end in glory. But if I fight it and starve it, it will not be able to gain victory over me today. This is why it is so important to start each day off with Bible reading and prayer. The needs of the spirit should be met before the needs of the body. The battle with the old nature starts as soon as I wake, so I need to start fighting from the moment I open my eyes.
The seven responses to this set of written rules were extremely consistent. We are Christians. We do not have to follow rules. Of course, these are some very wise rules. Nice job on them, by the way. And if we actually broke any of them, we certainly could not expect anyone to take our Christianity very seriously, nor the Lord to bless us in our lives. And they certainly do describe a very lovely Christian testimony. But actually writing them down? That was taking things a bit too far. It's not how brethren folks live. We live in the unwritten, the unspoken, the deniable. Nice work, though. I think standing outside our own culture even far enough as to codify what was expected of us was beyond most people. A sign that I was treading very dangerously. If you take a direct look at something you do every day, it might look silly. You might get too much insight and see through stuff you didn't want to see through, stuff you needed to treat as if it were solid as a brick wall. That's why I think that almost everyone who is of much use to God in the Bible, right up to and including the Lord Himself, was an outsider, looking at the culture as if from the outside of it, and as a result, getting pushed outside of it and crucified and buried there. My experience of brethren adolescence in recent times is a bit troubling. Seems like in many cases, if you take the rules out of the teen, there's nothing much left. The socializing cultural limits were the point, it seems, in far too many cases. It's almost like our Christianity was really mostly those rules, the outer forms of the lifestyle, and our lives were nothing more than saying yes to that little new nature sitting on our right shoulder with the wings and halo, and no to the old nature we really kind of were deep down. In our hearts, we lived and felt and viewed ourselves as quite unredeemed by the blood of Christ.